Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. And today I'm joined by Tom Weiser and Kevin Murphy of Nerpa Travel. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Who's going to go first? Oh, I am. Really good. Lovely. Thank you so much for having us on. Yes, lovely to be here.
Good. Lovely to have you here. And Kev?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Excited to jump in and see how this pans out. Not been on a podcast for a while, so...
Interesting you say jump in, because that's exactly where I want to start, because you guys jump into everything. You're really into the adventure and experience space, but you've got a serious eye on the planet and sustainability. Tell us a little bit, maybe, Kev, you start with Nerpa Travel. Who are you? What do you do?
So, Nerpa Travel has kind of stemmed from, you know, Tom and I worked together... I mean, what was it? 11 years ago, we started working together. And we worked in adventure travel at that time. And then obviously COVID showed up. Everyone was let go. And Tom had always been a little more eco-conscious in what we wanted to do. And after, you know, stepping out on our own, we decided, you know, we can organize our own trips that align more with how we view the world and how we want to, create adventure for both us and for the general public, really.
So you created a company together, Tom, and tell me how that came about.
I think a lot of it came about by me and Kevin sort of sitting down, talking about the work we'd previously done, the good, the bad, what we'd like to change from it. Also the realities of sort of where we were. It was that sort of immediate COP in Glasgow sort of environment.
I remember it well.
And we just sort of thought, you know, we see sort of electric vehicles and sustainable travel as the default future of society. So why don't we get into that space? Not first, partly to establish ourselves as the main player, so to say, but also just to show that the type of adventure travel that we think people enjoy can be done on electric vehicles. So let's just do it.
Okay, so let's define what you mean by adventure travel. Kev, tell me what sort of things you do.
So it's completely getting out of your comfort zone. You know, that's our previous experience has been using particularly quirky vehicles to get from A to B via Z. So, and they were inappropriate vehicles for the trip. So, you know, you'd have a bit of a banger of a car and, you know, it would break down. You'd have to stop and get help. We saw a different spin on this with EVs. We saw this as, you know, you still have to get immersed into the local culture and speak with local people, but it's not a case of we need to fix up this beaten car. We need to charge our bikes. So do you mind if we sit here for an hour? We'll have a coffee and then we'll bugger off. And, you know, it really gives you the opportunity to get involved. And ironically, I don't have a license. I'm not able to due to a medical condition. So I am Tom's squeaky third wheel for the most part. And particularly when that comes to recce situations, Tom does the adventure part and I tend to take public transport around a lot of these places to kind of pincer attack the entire country. We don't want to attack a country, obviously.
There's enough of that going on as it is. Thanks very much.
But between the two of us, we really, like, Tom goes rural and meets, you know, people where we're still a complete novelty. And I essentially evaluate the local infrastructure because we're forced to. So, A, it shows that you can adventure on an EV, but it also shows that you can have an adventure somewhere without one and, you know, of your own accord using public transport, which, you know, in turn is more sustainable.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, rather than using a beat up moped on the, you know, Hagyang Loop in northern Vietnam, which has just been well trodden.
So Kev takes public transport. Excuse me, Tom, you're using an electric motorbike, presumably, to undertake your guiding of travel.
Yeah, so this was specifically for our recce trip for the event. We were relatively confident that the vehicle had the right technical specs to be able to do what we wanted it to do, which in short was about 100 miles of travel per day, which equates to 5 hours of riding, which in our mind is sort of enough that it's not a slugfest, but it's also fun and you can explore. So I rented a bike from the manufacturer and went out to do that distance, to go up mountains, to make sure that every small town I stopped in, there'd be a small cafe that would be kind enough to let me charge whilst I wandered around and found a market and took some pictures. And then we sort of combined our knowledge. So Kev had been looking at a lot of the infrastructure and the local partners. I'd done the feasibility study on the bike. And we came together to study this. This is a goer, effectively. And from there, we started further conversations with the manufacturer to make sure that we could put this event on.
And this was in Vietnam, is that right?
Yes.
Right. So talk me through that process, Kev. So you went out to Vietnam with Tom to do a recce to see where you were going to go. And at that stage, are you both on public transport to do that?
No, so Tom went about halfway up Vietnam to a city called Da Nang. So that's where he flew in.
Da Nang me, went off to get a rope and hang me. It's a Robin Williams thing, never mind.
Tom went up to Da Nang and I went to Ho Chi Minh. And our route was going to be between Ho Chi Minh and Da Nang. So Tom did a loop up through the mountains and kind of evaluated the feasibility of that. And I landed in Ho Chi Minh, did a couple of handshakes and, you know, we had some ideas for venues that we would launch from. We didn't necessarily want to put people in the center of Ho Chi Minh to launch a trip like this because that is one of the most terrifying cities to ride a bike in the world. I would put money on it. Maybe Mumbai might be worse. But I've never seen roads like Ho Chi Minh. It is unbelievable. And we kind of figured out towards the end that the only way to get around Vietnam traffic is just keep moving. It's a river. It's not a road. You just keep going and navigate. And it's the same with crossing roads as well. You just close your eyes and walk in a straight line and people will avoid you. So I went into Ho Chi Minh and I just slowly made my way up the coast. And then Tom and I kind of met in the middle. So I was looking at venues along the way, seeing if, you know, charging was possible en masse. Because I think, Tom, was it 13 or 14 people we had in the group?
It was 12 on that first trip.
12 on the first trip. So we had to find locations that had the ability to charge that many bikes. So it was figuring out locations, meeting the right people, and then making sure that we were working with the right people and the right manufacturers, and then getting a cultural taste along the way.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
Fabulous. It sounds like an EV rider's driver's perfect holiday, but it doesn't come without a few challenges. I mean, even in the UK, people who use electric vehicles say, oh, they don't go very far, there's nowhere to charge, and we've got 80,000 charging points. So How do you get on, Tom, honestly, with a bike in the middle of essentially nowhere, despite Kev's best efforts? You're going to have some periods of time when it's a bit squeaky bum time and you're not sure whether you're going to get to the next plug socket where you can plug in and get all of your fellow travellers sorted. Do you panic about these things? Do you worry about it? Is it an enjoyable experience? Talk to us.
There's two answers to this. There's the sort of my character. I am one of the sort of largest worriers of battery life. I suffer terribly from range anxiety. I worry when my phone gets below 60. I'm just one of those people. But sadly, I had none of these worries in Vietnam because there's normally a house on a road. And if you're yes. in that bad a situation, a big smile, Google Translate, just allowing yourself to knock on a door and say, oh, please help me. And you'll be amazed by the kindness of strangers. And the great thing about these bikes is they do just charge from a domestic socket. And from 0 to 100 is 4 hours. It's about 1 kilometer a minute of charge. So I had no concerns whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was a bit hairy at night. Some of the
roads. Is it a mindset thing then? Is it a positive mindset thing? If you want to make an electric vehicle work, you can.
Absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt. And I would say I was never really dipping below 40% of charge. And I was very comfortable to a point at which I sort of stopped worrying and sort of knew I'd get where I needed to go. If I had stop and charge, it's a chance to explore. And you know, that's one of the joys of our events, is that the electric vehicle isn't necessarily the full draw of why people want to go. It's cultural interaction in which sustainable transport is the vehicle, no pun intended.
It's just brilliant. And I love the idea. I'm a bit weird perhaps, but I love the idea of the public transport element of this as well, Kev, because you know, even that is a holiday idea all in itself. Going on holiday and just using public transport, which immerses you into society, probably like no other way that you can get around, is brilliant.
Don't get me wrong, it can be a huge pain in the arse. because sometimes you go to these places and you know that you'll turn up at a bus station and be like, okay, the next bus is at 9 p.m. So you're there, you know, 2 p.m. you're like, okay, what am I going to do for the next 7 hours? But again, it's all perspective. That's 7 hours to go and, you know, try food that I've never tried before, or, you know, go for a wander, try and find some animals. Total animal nerd here. So that was a good way of killing time out there. But it's all the way that you look at it. You know, you've got the EV, you just need to keep it fed, just like you know, just keep it topped up. And then, yeah, embrace the public transport, embrace the weird, and take the slow route,
yeah.
I think is the way to do it.
It's a good motto.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a really interesting way of seeing the country from both ends, I think.
What's the profile of people who come on your holidays, Tom? Is it people who are young, backpackery type people who just want to get out and really, not rough it, but experience the reality of a destination? Or is it somebody older like me who feels like I've missed out on that adventure in my life? Who comes? Or is it a real mix?
I'd like to say it's a real mix. I think I would say it sort of goes between 25 upwards. It tends to be people who are in professional jobs, who maybe are a little bit bored of like performative travel, don't want to sit on a beach and slowly become a rotisserie chicken for a week, which is fine. If that's what people want to do, that's great. But I think it's people who want to explore more, want to, I guess, in a way, challenge themselves to do something out of the ordinary. Maybe might not have had the confidence to do these sort of like motorbike holidays in the past or more adventurous travel. and the fact that we're offering it as a low barrier to entry, friendly group trip in which you'll be surrounded by hopefully like-minded people, that's sort of the real attractive aspect of our trips.
So we've spoken about Vietnam, Kev. Where else do you have opportunities to adventure like this?
So we actually, last April, we ran an electric mountain bike trip throughout Wales. And we brought a group. It was supposed to be a group of 12, but a group of six turned up, which for us is, I quite like a smaller group. So you can remember their children's names, their dogs' names, and it gets, you know, if there's only a group of six and there's me and Tom there, we really get a good feeling of who the group are, and they feel, you know, like they're in good hands. So we had Wales, which went really well. And then we just came back, what, a month and a half ago. Tom and I went out and did a recce in Thailand to, we're looking at a bit more of a higher end trip there, which is a little more luxurious, well, substantially more luxurious. It's more, I guess that's more aimed towards the Tesla owner end of EV. So yeah, that's currently where we're looking at, but Tom and I have got a spreadsheet, that we call the toilet of ideas that we've had for the last 4 or 5 years. And that's every idea that has, you know, been brewed away in our brain. So we're not short of ideas at the moment. But we just want to kind of get a really strong foundation of what we're doing before we start going to, you know, West Africa or...
Well, as I was going to say, as Kev just mentioned West Africa, we did have a very interesting meeting last week. I'll be as cryptic as I can, but there may be something coming to West Africa in the next year or so.
Wow. So this is your full-time gig. This is what you do all of the time. How long have you been in existence as a business?
I guess we founded the company 4 or 5 years ago, peak COVID. And
as you do.
All of my best decisions came from that time.
Nobody's traveling. Let's have a travel business.
But yeah, you buy low, don't you? And we'd just been sort of ticking along as a little sort of side hobby, side hustle. You know, I was working in the voluntary youth sector in Wales. Kev was working in wildlife TV. We were working with companies we were friendly with to help put on events for them. And it just so happened on the mountain bike trip last year, we met three amazing people who believed in us or believed our mistruths and offered to give us loads of money. They weren't mistruths. They're all incredibly true. And you know, they very kindly invested in the company, and it allowed us to go full time from last October. So we both handed our notices in.
And do you feel free now? Do you feel as though the sort of the shackles of the 9-to-5 corporate world are gone, and that you don't bounce to other people's tune? You're now able to walk your own walk, Kev.
I'm still adjusting to that. You know, like we went on the recce in Thailand in January. And I'm still in that mindset of as soon as I wake up, I'm like, right, need to do this, 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 and this, and this. Whereas we're on our own terms now. We don't have to stay in £5 a night hotels. We don't have to, you know, we could not treat ourselves by any means, but not have to sleep on the floor. You know, as much fun as that is as part of an adventure, when it's your career and you're trying to stay comfortable, it's, you know, so I'm still in that kind of mindset of I need to, you know, save every single penny. And we do. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a bit of, oh, let's get the train, you know, and then I'm like, yeah, but the coach is £10 cheaper, even though it's an hour and a half longer. That's the kind of mindset I find myself in. And penny pinching, because I want to, you know, get the most out of this, and the most out of the investment, because by no means is it a 10-year salary for us. It's going to get us to the line.
It's seed funding.
So, to answer your question, I'm in the transition of trying to find my feet with that and have that outlook. But we always give ourselves, you know, a few days either side to acclimatize and, you know, decompress at the end. There's always something Tom and I treat ourselves with at the end of a trip, and it's we'll go and we'll either go and get a foot rub or we'll go and get a massage, and it's like, right, you've slept on crappy beds.
Yeah.
Spend £20 and treat yourself to a reasonable meal. Go get a massage because bus seats are really uncomfortable.
You've earned it. Yeah, absolutely. How have you adjusted, Tom?
Oh, I'd like to say quite well. I've been very fortunate that a lot of my previous employers, I've been in the charity sector for the past 5 or 6 years. And the charity sector, I'm not sure if you've spent any time in it, but they give you a lot of freedom, but also a lot of responsibility. So you're doing about 5 people's jobs. You always have to be relatively self-starting and self-motivated. And I guess I'd been working remote for the last 8 years. So the actual day-to-day nuts and bolts of me getting on and doing my work, I'm quite comfortable with. But the hardest part was the incredibly steep learning curve from being an employee to, oh my God, a company has like 6,000 moving parts that you have to try and, you're like, what's payroll? Oh God, HMRC. I don't know. Like it's all of those little things.
And do you divide the tasks up according to what you're best at? So I suppose, you know, you mentioned HMRC. Is that something, Kev, that you're comfortable with and you do all the numbers, or how do you divide the labour?
At present, Tom is doing the HMRC kind of compliance side of things.
All the compliance-y bits, yeah.
And does a lot of the copy because he's better at doing words than I am. Then I am more focused on kind of creating the content, editing the videos. And now it's leaning... Well, we have to put all of our eggs into sales now, sales and marketing. We have the strong base. We've done all of the complicated paperwork that we know of. So now we can really focus on getting ourselves out there. And we're really fortunate with the 3 investors that we've got. They're all very well-established people in various industries in the States. So they have a very different outlook and insight to what Tom and I are used to. So, they're acting as kind of mentors, and it's interesting to see the nitty gritty of the back end of business. And Americans are, you know, money centric to say the least. So it's a really, we're used to saying a lot of, yeah, maybe that'll be nice. Perhaps, whereas they're just clear yes or no, completely brutal. There is no offending them with whatever you say. It's we're learning a lot. And as Tom said, it was October, November that we both went full time on this. And it is difficult to divide a lot of the work because we don't know what it is.
but I think... me and Kev have worked together and known each other for over 10 years. So we have a really good understanding of where our skills naturally lie. And more often than not, we'll just sort of naturally split off, do what we need to do, and trust that the other person's going to do a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, we've been through the ringer, but between the two of us, there was every summer we'd be in each other's pockets for 7, 8, 9 weeks, and wouldn't be until the last week that we'd probably sit down, have a passive aggressive argument, and then cry, and then we'll be fine again. So we know we have a limit, but
yeah,
and that's why we're keeping our trip short. Essentially, we don't want to cry at each other anymore.
So how long are your trips? A couple of weeks?
10 days max. Yeah, 10 days, 2 weeks. And we keep the group size small.
Yeah. Now, one of the things which I find doing this job is that energy is really, really important. My own internal energy, to be able to keep the positive, keep the calm. And especially in your role, there will be people who are out of their comfort zone by some considerable distance. How do you do that, Tom? How do you remain calm under pressure?
I think when it comes to adventure travel, I guess sort of when it comes working internationally in any context, you stay calm thanks largely to previous experience of not being calm. I know that's not a particularly useful thing to say, but when you sort of put things into context and draw on some of the mistakes or things that have gone wrong historically, you realize that by and large, everything has a resolution. So if you're starting at the point of, I will solve this problem eventually, it's less of a problem within reasons. Like, we've worked on trips where much more serious things have happened, but they all got resolved. So yeah, everything works out in the end.
I get the sense that you're quite a storyteller, Tom. Tell us about a time when you've thought, oh my Lord, this is never going to sort itself out in a million years.
Okay. oh, good Lord. So Kev has to take all the credit for this, but I'll give the story. So it was our first trip together to Morocco for a previous company. There was some complications at the border with Moroccan customs. We were shipping 50 motorbikes into the country for an event that was going to happen there. It was about 3 days out from the launch of the event. The motorbikes had yet to clear customs. It was, you know, squeaky bum time. So Kev went out across, I was just doing the soft tasks, like, oh, get some paper and pens, go into the market, get some scarves, finish off the risk assessment, you know, easy bits. Kev was pounding the pavements in Marrakesh, talking to scooter renter provider after another, trying to get 50 motorbikes and a truck them out to the start line in the desert, which was about a 15-hour drive, and then get them ready for the customers to ride them. Somehow, by hook or by crook, Kev got them. To this day, I think sort of deals have been made with the devil to make sure that happens. But they turned up at the start line. But then also fortuitously, the bikes that were in customs got cleared the day before. We got them express trucked to the start line as well. So our customers arrived. We had 50 motorbikes in boxes that we needed to build, 50 motorbikes on a truck. And our customers were like, what are those bikes doing there? And we were like, oh, don't worry about those. They're just, they're, you know, that's unrelated to what's going on here. So we did all of the customer comms, hosting, training, the party, whilst running out every few minutes to build a bike and test it. And it was just chaos. I mean, I think I had about 30 minutes sleep that night. I remember at about 5:30 in the morning, I sent Kevin a handover voice note. And I wish Kev kept a recording of it, because it was just, if you've ever heard someone who was on probably 2% energy try to give quite a dull technical overview of how many bikes had been signed off and talked. I signed off by saying something like, oh, go to bed, I'll see you in 40 minutes. But it was, yeah, it worked, you know. Everyone went off, everyone had a great time, and it just becomes a funny anecdote. It's the definition of third-hand fun.
But it's the reason why, I guess, you do these things, is that you're pushing yourself as well. It's one thing for the visitors to come and to have a new experience, but every day for you is a new experience because you're pushing the boundaries of what you are capable of doing. And that is a testament to your character. I guess, Kev, for you, it's, you know, having been a filmmaker, and working with animals a lot, there's an awful lot of logistics that's involved in television and making film. This stuff is almost second nature to you. Getting 50 bikes is the sort of thing that you have to deal with.
Not as much. I mean, the TV industry, although, you know, it takes 4 or 5 years for an Attenborough series to get made, it's not as clear-cut and well-organized as everyone would imagine.
Really?
So, sometimes it's last minute, just hoping that the animal's going to turn up. But the experiences through, you know, the tourism industry have far surpassed any involvement in the TV industry. The complications, because, you know, if you're working with the BBC, you just flash a BBC ID card anywhere in the world and they're like, oh, come on in, come on in. Whereas me and Tom turn up with, you know, T-shirts with sweat patches that says NERPA across our chest. It's not as much of a good sell. Like, we went on a recce around Wales the other day. We were like going to a golf course to do, you know, for one of the higher end trips. And we turned up in our T-shirts and we were like, are they going to let us in? You know? But in general, the travel industry is so chaotic and can be chaotic and was chaotic. But with our own company now, and we're, you know, it's under our own terms, we have the time to make sure that we've problem solved before anything hits the fan. We know where the errors have been for the most part. There's obviously always going to be issues. But yeah, it's under our own terms now, so we can be, you know, spend far more time prepping for it and giving ourselves a longer runway as well. Yeah, it's far more complicated in tourism. And there's a lot more people, external people, that want to shove their ideas on you.
Yes.
Whereas TV, you have a set shoot, the outcome is this. You go to, you know, work in rural Vietnam, one of your guests, you know, one of your suppliers hasn't shown up, he's not answering his phone, and it's like, okay, right, well, where are we going to charge these 12 bikes now? We need this guy to help us. That's when you end up knocking on doors, rattling fences, and, you know, just waving plugs around, hoping that someone's going to help you. And more often than not, they do. You're always, you know, it always works out. Everything comes out in the wash, you know.
Absolutely. How do you see the future for you guys? Scale is always something that we talk about with entrepreneurs, startups, people who are getting into an industry. Do you have a view, Tom, about scale? Is that an enemy for you and you want to keep it tight and small and just be able to, as you say, know the individuals, know their children's names, all that kind of stuff? And you would lose the essence of the business if you scaled? Or are you looking at how you might grow and franchise out and train people to be able to deliver what you currently deliver? Or is there a different model for you?
I think when it comes to scaling, there are certain trips that me and Kev always want to be front and center and heavily involved in. Partly because they, you know, are passion projects, and partly because the nature of the customer means that we prefer to be more hands-on. I don't, and I hope Kev doesn't contradict me on this, I don't ever see a world in which we are this leviathan of adventure travel. I think we'll probably always be on the more relatively boutique side of things. That sounds a little bit pretentious, but you know what I mean. I would love to have a solid repertoire of good, deliverable events, 6-7 around the world, in which we can train up local guides and event managers to effectively run the trip, and eventually maybe hand it over to them to run fully as their own project, and they can keep much more of the projects of the profits of that trip there. Partly because we don't view this business as a purely extractive entity. Tourism has done a lot of good, but has also done a lot of less good. So we're only trying to make sure that our trips have a legacy of some description.
I love that. That's a really wholesome way of looking at an industry and saying, do you know, there's a bit of it for us and it's a special bit and we're going to nurture that because that's what we are here for. That's our truth. I love that about you guys. That's really genuine. But there'll be people who are listening to this, business leaders, who are saying, yeah, you know, I'm a bit stuck in corporate. They pay me a shed ton of money to do a thing. I do that thing. It wrings out every ounce of my joy. I wonder, is there an unconventional wisdom in you, Kev, which you can pass on to somebody who's a business leader saying sustainability is a pain in the ass to deliver? It costs a lot of money. It isn't rewarding. Why should I bother? Why should they bother?
Broaden your horizon, really. I know it's nice to have pockets full of cash, but the life experience you're going to get from a trip in Vietnam or rural Thailand, particularly curated by Tom and I, and the connections we've made, you're not going to get that experience anywhere else. And that's one of our kind of consistent threads with what we're making is unique. No one's touching that. So. People get burnt out in the corporate industry. This will take you completely out of your comfort zone, but in a comfortable way at the same time. You know, it's always nice to have a bit of conflict on an adventure, but we're giving people the tools to create their own adventure so they can go as fast as they want, as slow as they want. And we're trying to look for good times for people in corporate to go away. You know, end of the tax year is a terrible idea. But for example, the next Vietnam trip we're going to put on sale is aimed kind of specifically at teachers in that window, because teachers, they get burnt out in their own ways, though they have substantially less money to spend. We're still making our Vietnam trip accessible, but we're doing it in a window where they can, you know, they'll walk out of school on a Friday, they'll be in Vietnam by a Monday, 2 weeks later they're ready to go back to work with stories that they can tell the kids that they're teaching, and hopefully, you know, slowly change people one by one. But yeah, the burnout from corporate. We have various offerings. So we have the luxury one-night local experience, and then we have the kind of more grit-your-teeth adventure. And yeah, look at the world from a different perspective. You know, it doesn't all have to be velvet and olive and burgundy colours. It's, you know, it can get your shoes muddy.
Tom, tell me about somebody that you can remember vividly stuck in your mind who has come on one of your adventures. And you've looked at them and when you've met them and thought, oh, you need this adventure, you need this holiday, and you see them grow, change, develop and suck in that rewarding experience that allows them to go back to their normal lives. Can you think of anybody that you've really made a difference to?
Oh, God, going through my mental Rolodex of people who have done our trips. Actually, one of the guys on our mountain bike trip last year, I won't say his name, he was on the cusp, I think, of selling his business. And he was sort of deep into the, you know, the nitty gritty of the lawyers and the paperwork and all of that nonsense. And he came on the trip. And sometimes you see people and you just think, oh, I really hope you have a good time on this trip. I know you think that about all of your participants, but you will form special connections with certain people, even if it's from afar. God, that sounded really creepy. but anyway, we were blessed with good weather in Wales. It was sunny for 7 days, and he had never done a mountain bike trip before. And he just took to it like a duck from water, like a duck onto water. To the point at which by the end of it, I told him that he could probably become a very good ultra cyclist. And you could just see that something sort of changed about him. He sort of was more relaxed and I don't know, like shoulders start to slump, I just droop a little bit from actually having that breakaway and being able to sort of recenter yourself. And, you know, being a Welsh company, we are obliged to say that there is no better place in the world to do that than Wales. And then he called me up a few weeks afterwards, just asking for advice on what bicycle to buy. And now he does ultra cycling events.
You've changed his life.
Wales changed his life. We just did the logistics.
You're far too modest. The future, Kevin. Let's round up with the future. You mentioned West Africa. What other places do you want to go to that you've yet to scope out?
As far as the trip goes, the one that I am deep down hoping we eventually do. There's two. There's riding electric bikes. Like electric bicycles from Lombok, which is the next island over from Bali, and island hop all the way to Komodo, which for me would be an absolute dream because A, you're in Indonesia experiencing some of the best landscapes in the world. B, you're on an electric bicycle so I can ride it. And C, Komodo dragons. Every story needs more dragons. And then there's also one that I think is a very long way away, and something in the Everglades in the States. That will be a water-based trip, and I'll leave that there and let you think what that could be. But think as ridiculous as you can, and that's it. So those two for me are very, very interesting, but knowing that the next goal is West Africa, I am chomping at the bit to get rolling on that.
Yeah. So when do you start the prep?
We don't want to overcook it. We don't want too much variation. It's quite nice to be railroaded into an adventure sometimes because there's too much to think about. So we try and take people out of their comfort zone and put them in a different comfort zone.
I think I'm loving your zone. I think I need some of your zone myself. It sounds fantastic, absolutely fantastic, idyllic. My wife keeps going on about, let's just go to Mauritius. And I think it was Tom who said, you know, the rotisserie chicken thing. And I just keep sitting there thinking, it's just, I'm just not feeling it. Oh, you guys, you could be taking my money.
There's always room.
If you knew me, Kev, I'm 6'4", built like a brick shed.
Fair enough.
I would still.
We can always really make room for a bigger one.
Good man. I think that was what I was looking for. Listen, guys, you are so fresh in your approach, your thinking, and you just can do people. And that's what the EV industry needs. It's what adventure needs, and it's all about the mind. I'm convinced that you guys have a positive mindset, and whatever you put your mind to, you will do brilliantly. But today you've been outstanding. So both Kev, Tom, thank you so much for today. Wish you extremely well with the next adventure, and if there's anything we can do to support you as the EV Cafe going forward, you only have to ask. I know we've got an audience of people who will be fascinated by your story, and it just remains to say bless you, thank you, safe travels, go well, and come back and tell us more about West Africa once it's done. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. And I would be remiss if I didn't do a shameless plug. The trip's called Lost in Vietnam, December 3rd to 13th, 2026. And our website is nerpatravel.com.
Good, because I was going to ask you, my final question is always, how do people find out more? nerpatravel.com. Where did Nerpa come from? Forgive my ignorance.
Well, as mentioned earlier, Tom and I worked in Russia extensively for the 8 to 9 weeks of the year. The region in Russia that we were working in was beside the world's deepest lake called Lake Baikal, which is almost bang in the center of Russia. Holds 20% of the world's unfrozen fresh water.
and hosts the only freshwater inland seal, which is called a Nerpa. And so it was our working relationship began in that region. Nerpa is a land and water dwelling creature. They're unbelievably cute. So I think it kind of sums us up. And they have mustaches. So, you know.
What's not to like? I've spent a little bit of time in marketing. And so Nerpa, the seal of approval. Come on. Come on. Let's have it.
Can we trademark it? You're not getting any royalties for that.
Listen, guys, it's been fabulous. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we are going to catch up with you and your travels very soon. Until then, that's the EV Cafe Takeaway Podcast. We'll catch you on the socials. We'll put all the links in the chat. Catch up with Kev, Tom. Reach out, find out more, and we'll see you again soon. Bye.